Hey, y'all, I am taking this show on the road. To celebrate the launch of my book, I am going to be throwing book parties across this country, and I want you to come. We're going to be doing parties in Chicago, San Francisco, LA, Dallas, Miami, New York City, two options there, DC, Philly, and Boston. So if you live in or near any of those cities, then you are going to want to come and grab a ticket. We are going to have brunch in some places, at others we'll be having wine and snacks. You will get a copy of the book with your ticket, and you will get to come meet me, talk to me, listen to me read from the book, answer some questions. We're just going to hang out and vibe on all things thought work and advancing the feminist mindset revolution together. And of course, there'll also be swag. You can get your ticket at unfuckyourbrain.com/tour, T-O-U-R, or you can text your email to +1-347-997-1784, and the code word is TOR. I cannot wait to hug you in person. Let's go. Come hang out.
Welcome to Unfuck Your Brain, the only podcast that teaches you how to use psychology, feminism, and coaching to rewire your brain and get what you want in life. And now here's your host, Harvard Law School grad, feminist rock star, and master coach, Cara Lowenthal.
Hello, my friends. I have quite a treat for you today. Today, we are going to be talking to Simone Soul, who is a life coach who teaches other coaches how to basically be their weird-ass amazing selves in their marketing and in how they talk to their clients. We're not really talking about marketing because this is not a marketing podcast. But Simone and I are both very intellectual in ways in our approach to coaching. She's also more woo in some ways than I am. But I think we share a really kind of unique blend of, can you say you share something unique? Let's go with it. We share similar and unusual blends, I think, of kind of heart and mind in our coaching and in our approaches to lives. And so we have been talking a lot recently about the value of rest and why women have so much trouble resting and the sort of cult of hustle mentality and the cult of productivity. And Simone is also a like nerd like me. So on this episode, we kind of dive into our thinking about the way women are socialized to think about work and rest, the impact of the Industrial Revolution. We talk about kind of the intellectual and social history of rest, and we talk about the ways in which there are feminist reasons to be reclaiming rest and to be divorcing our self-worth from that productivity hustle that is so deeply ingrained. So it was an amazing conversation. I loved it so much, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear it. I know you are going to get so many mind-blowing gems from this talk.
Well, actually, depending on where you're listening from, this is either the Joyful Marketing Podcast with Simone Soul or it's Unfuck Your Brain with Cara Lowenthal. So either way, welcome.
Or both. You should listen to this twice because it's going to be that good. So
that's right. So I'm going to introduce myself first for those of you who might be meeting me for the first time. I am Simone Soul. I am indeed the host of the Joyful Marketing Podcast, and I am the marketing coach for life coaches. And I always forget what to say after that.
I don't know. That sounds good.
That sounds good.
I'm Cara Lowenthal. I'm the host of the Unfuck Your Brain podcast. I am a feminist mindset coach. It means I teach women how to identify what patriarchy and socialization has done to their brains and then how to fix it. Also, you guys can't see Simone, but Simone is famous for her glasses collection, among other things. In addition to her marketing brilliance, she has the world's possibly biggest, most amazing collection of giant glasses.
Yeah. You know, my favorite thing about that is that everybody assumes that I like get my frames from like weird little indie stores that I know about. It's like, oh, I got this from like
Amazon
hidden boutique in Prague 3 years ago. And this, you know, which lady sold it to me? Actually, they're like mostly from Amazon, like box stores. So you too can Google them.
They are amazing, but what you can't Google is the aplomb to carry them off.
Yeah.
That's what you can't Google. Like that, that is the specific.
Well, guess
step.
What? That aplomb. Is that how you say it? I've never said that word.
I have no idea. Until I was like 35, I thought that the word misshapen was pronounced mishapen. So once I heard it said out loud, I was like, oh, now that I think about it, that does make sense. Yeah. That makes sense. That checks out. Definitely.
Aplomb or aplomb, however it's pronounced, it starts with a thought. And yeah. You can borrow the thought too, which is that if I want to wear it, I can pull it off. I can carry it off.
Oh, that's a good thought. I like it.
Yeah. I think I firmly believe that being able to pull something off is a thought. Okay. So I was stalking Kara for far longer than she was stalking me. Then
now it's a mutual stalking endeavor.
Now it's mutual fully.
Oh my God. Wait, we have to pause. I have to tell the story because I infamously stalked Rachel Hart, to be my friend.
We talked about it
on the podcast. And then I heard this NPR story this week about this guy whose best friend moved to Vienna without telling him. And so he just like moved to Vienna also, but he just like showed up. He was like, hey, you're not allowed to move without me. Like now I live here too. And so I sent it to Rachel and I was like, this makes me look very chill. Like I did not.
Best friend moved to Vienna without, why would a best friend move somewhere without telling their best friend?
Because this is what happens to cis straight men under patriarchy and the way that they're socialized.
They're my God, Kara, you have so much work to do in the world.
But they don't communicate about these things. They're just like, oh, I'll just let you know later.
Move to Vienna.
This is how I mean, my boyfriend that I had at the beginning of the pandemic, my ex was trapped in Paris during the pandemic. And it was like this whole thing and he like couldn't get out. And then he didn't tell me that he was coming home until he was like on the plane coming home. Like that was when he thought to let me know that was happening. And then I was like texting Rachel in a, like, what is happening? And she asked her husband, when would you let me know if that happened to you? And he was like, yeah, once I'm on the plane. So this is just like a whole other thought process.
I do not understand their models. Anyway, I was saying, I think the mutual stalking started to happen when Kara and I kind of like started bonding over like our shared like slacker identity.
Our love of naps.
And we started talking about it little bit by little bit. And then we realized there's something here, or at least I realized there's really something here that's a piece of the conversation that's really missing. And Kara teaches a lot about productivity and mindset. And I teach a ton about business and coaching. And I think and obviously people bring a lot of their assumptions and beliefs about productivity and what it means to do good work that are unquestioned, like these unquestioned assumptions about that, into their work in marketing. And they make themselves a lot more miserable than they need to be. And they make themselves a lot less productive than they could be. And I've unwittingly become a champion for like taking long naps and, you know, doing things the quote unquote, the lazy way. And I didn't start out like thinking that this was like something that I was going to stand for as a principle. Like I actually started out thinking that it was like a personality defect.
Always.
100% doing it wrong. And, to my own surprise, you know, I think I kind of figured out along the way with my thoughts, like a recipe for tapping into a great, well of creativity and power and productivity inside me that was completely not at all, not only not mutually exclusive with like a flippant disregard for what like conventional culture teaches as, what productivity looks like and like these schedules and routines and calendars and stuff like that. Not only was it not mutually exclusive, I feel like my power and creativity came from the way that I really I felt free to honor my own rhythms and flows. So we started talking about that. And I think at the time, I mean, you can tell the story, but you were also going through something, I don't want to tell your story, but.
I was doing a lot. I was doing the same work and I think getting to like the next level of it. I mean, this is something that I got coached on in my master coach training 5 years. And that was whatever that was. Yeah. 5 years ago where I have always been somebody who can basically like produce A-minus work in an hour that takes other people 9 hours, right? But then I'm constantly telling myself, if you can do the A-minus in an hour, then you should spend the 9 hours, then it would be an A+, right? Oh. Or you should like do the more, right? So
it's a personality flaw if you don't want to do
that. Yeah, exactly. Like I should, right. And like, of course you should be trying to be the best, right? So I've been getting coached on this on and off for years. And I remember my master coach training, Brooke, Castillo being like, what if you just were like, hey, isn't it awesome that I can do an A minus in an hour without any planning or prep. Like Stacey Bateman and I talk about this all the time. Like, and I think one of the, so what she and I talk about is how like we're opposite and we both had trouble accepting it, right? Because this is what patriarchy does to women, I think, is just teaches us to believe that however we're doing it is wrong, right?
I'm just laughing because continuing on the theme that you started with Rachel Hart, in my mind, it's always like people who can produce A-minus work in an hour, but they do go through the trouble of producing A-plus work in 9 hours. That's why they end up in Harvard and I ended up at Wellesley.
Yeah, that's definitely not why. Rachel also would think that, and it's the opposite.
Superior human beings, and I'm doing my life wrong.
Yeah, no, I went to Harvard by doing everything at the last minute. But like Stacey had the opposite where she's somebody who really does like to plan and spend a lot of time, but she was just beating herself up being like, well, a car can do it in an hour. I should just do it on the fly. Right. And so I think it's such an example of like, the truth is the problem with the capitalism and Protestant productivity narrative, especially for women, is that nobody wins. Even the people who are like keeping that schedule or doing the 9 hours of work still don't feel good about themselves. Right. Because you can never action your way to feeling good about yourself. Yeah. So I have been working on this for years and it did fine. And then I felt like I had gotten to an okay place with it. And then I started building my team. And then it was just like, it all came back up, right? It's like, you can do work on dating and then you get in a relationship. And it's like, oh Jesus, now there's a whole other level of like work I have to do. And so the fact of being a boss with employees who did have fixed work hours, like brought up this whole new depth of having to do that work all over again on like, you know, what does it mean if I work? Even now, my brain is like, they're going to listen to the podcast, the employees, and they'll know, right? Like I have all this, had all this drama that what if I work 3 hours a day and they work 8 hours a day, right? What if I, like, I had all this drama around having employees brought up this sort of same thought pattern again, but just in the form of like having drama around.
Oh, kind of like being like perfectionistic towards them.
Both. I think I was like more judgmental of them when I was more judgmental of myself, of course.
Right.
Also kind of brought up this like, well, it's okay if you're only doing 4 hours of work a day when it's just you, but like you can't, but if you have employees who are working 8 hours a day, you can't be doing 4 hours of work a day, right? As though it's the hours that matter. And so when you and I started bonding about this, I had just finally had this breakthrough of like, oh, if somebody said to me, listen, you can hire me and I'm going to work 4 hours a day, and I'm going to 10 times your revenue or whatever, right? I'm going to double your revenue next year.
Please.
I'm only going to work those 4 hours a day. I'm not doing anything else. I'd be like, sold. Where do I sign? Like, I don't give a shit what you're doing with the rest of your time, right? And that is my role in my business, is to like do the deep thinking, create the content, have the strategic vision, all of these kinds of roles and jobs that maybe there are people who can do it 8 hours a day. I'm not one of them. I can do it 3 or 4 hours a day, like max. And then I need a nap. So I think I had just gotten to that place and then you posted something about it. And I was like, it was almost like, I'm sure I'd heard that before, but I couldn't believe it. But then I was like, right in the right place to be like, oh, okay. I'm not the only one who's like this.
That's amazing. This seems like the perfect time to introduce the concept I created 15 minutes ago.
Simone is trying to show me up. She was like, we're going to get on this podcast. We're just going to riff. And then I came on and she was like, hi, I've invented a new coaching concept with a whole name and I'm going to launch it on the podcast. And I was like, okay. Well,
I've been taught well.
I didn't come up with a new coaching concept. I thought we were just hanging out, but okay.
I was like, okay, because I was like a little bit nervous about this conversation. It's like, I better have something good to show up with. So this is how my like perfectionism shows up. But then I started going through all the themes that we touched on in our conversations and the things that I was thinking about on my own. And I drew this like table with two columns in my brain, and one with sort of like the kind of old, you know, what Kara and I see as the outdated model of productivity and the assumptions we have about it, things we believe about it. And the other column is what I have been learning, right, about different way of doing your work that is surprising and a lot of people aren't used to. And so I decided to name the left column the patriarchal industrial model of creativity. It's a little clunky, but go with me.
I would just call it the patriarchal industrial complex.
Complex. Okay.
Patriarchal. It's like the PIP complex. Patriarchal industrial productivity complex. There you go.
Okay. I just have it written down my way. So I'm just going to say it. Keep saying it the wrong way.
I keep hearing like military industrial complex. I think that's
okay. I'm just going to call it patriarchal industrial.
Yeah, industrial. What you're calling it.
whatever, creativity. And then the right column is the post-industrial feminist model of creativity. And I call it feminist, not just because Kara's on here, but I really think that this different way of thinking about productivity is really based in what is archetypally feminine wisdom and feminine knowing that I think has gotten really squashed over like centuries or like millennia of dominance of the patriarchy. And I'm going to tell you all about what I mean by that. Okay, so I want to talk about like each piece of it, how like contrasting what it looks like in the patriarchal industrial model and the post-industrial feminist model. Oh my God, like we can—
It's almost like pre and post, right? Because it's like a return to something.
Sure, yeah, right? It's like totally.
It's like the industrial revolution changed everything. And now we're like, wait, it's only been 200 years. This isn't how everything has to be. Like, how can we kind of go back to that lost wisdom?
I completely agree. It's lost wisdom. It's not like brand new wisdom. I think it's actually probably more ancient wisdom that is more—
Yeah, like, way more of human history, right? Exactly. Like the Industrial Revolution was only a couple of hundred years. We have eons of time before that when people were not operating on this like clock-based—
Perfect. Exactly. Okay, great. So the first point I have about it is that the patriarchal industrial version of productivity is solitary and individualistic. And the post-industrial version is collaborative and communal and communicative.
I didn't know if you were going to go through them all or if I'm just going to participate.
Okay. I'm going to go through it one by one. Because I noticed this. I spent all of my time observing my clients who are life coaches, like working on their marketing, working on their businesses. And so much, actually, as I'm talking about this, a lot of the concepts that I have listed out here in this table are going to kind of merge with each other. But a lot of them think that the way to get the best work done is like ass in chair and force myself to like go through these tasks. And it has to all come from my willpower and my brain and my models. And it's very much like, and kind of pushing my will and intellect out into the world. And it's a very one-way, unidirectional kind of flow. I think that is very much a hallmark of this. It's almost a very isolating way of doing things. Like it's just you and what you produce is a measure of your worth. And there's no communal or collaborative aspect of it. And even if there is a collaboration, it's very much like two individual people coming together with their separate pieces as opposed to a true communication that is greater than the sum of its parts. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so interesting because what I experience with this sort of freedom around schedule and not being so time-based is feels a little bit like, I don't know if I would say the opposite, but it feels like that there was something about trying to force myself to work on like a 9-to-5. Like I had this moment where I was like, I have spent all of this time and money and effort building this whole business that I can run from anywhere the way that I want to. And then I'm like beating myself up that I'm not sticking to the schedule worked by the investment bankers. Like, it just like makes no sense. Like, what was the point of all that if I am supposed to then like recreate that structure and, you know, if I'm going to like recreate that for myself. And so for me, it felt actually sort of like, I feel more individual. This may also probably just reflects like something, maybe part of a difference in how we think about things. I mean, on the one hand, I completely agree with you about there is that sort of isolated individualistic version of like, you know, yeah, like my work is just like me downloading from wherever. And, you know, and I also am somebody who develops ideas best through talking them out. So I'm relational in that way. But I think that this freedom to rest thing for me has felt very much like actually honoring how I am as an individual and sort of taking myself out. I was much more thinking of like, okay, well, this is how the collective is. It's an interesting paradox of industrialization, right? On the one hand, it is very mechanistic. It's like everybody's in a factory. They're doing their one thing.
It's in the machine, you're clogged, right?
Yeah, but then there's a whole big machine, right? So it's like this paradox of it's all one big group effort. And yet in the machine, everybody just has their one little part. And there isn't like a free exchange, what you're talking about, kind of a group generative creative process.
Yeah. I actually think we're talking about the same thing from different angles because I completely agree. There is a lot more freedom in when you're kind of like really free to be yourself and free to let your brain do what it does. But at the same time, when you give your brain the space to think and notice your organic flow in the first place to be able to follow it, right? When you get into your solitary rhythm and you get to notice it for the first time, which you don't even notice it exists if you're trying to like squash yourself into fit the machine your whole life, what happens is that you actually open yourself up to a different level of receptivity. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, huh, what does my body have to teach me about how I work best? And what kind of environments do I feel, you know, at my most generative? Or what kind of conversations, outer or inner conversations, light me up? And then you kind of get into a mode of noticing receptivity about what's around you. And then you start noticing things that are going to help you, right? As opposed to you being in a mode of trying to like push through a cognitively defined intellectual agenda through your force of will, right? And you're not receptive to any other form of intelligence that's trying to speak to you about how you might function best, how you might be productive best, and how you can best, because the work I do is marketing, really communicate with the people that you are trying to reach, right? It's a two-way communication.
Yeah. I wonder if it has something to do with like the difference in our, like, I think we experience it differently a little bit based on the difference maybe in our, what our work is focused on, or just kind of like you're a little, you know, I think you're like, you talk more about a relationship with the divine or with spirit in a way that I, you know, I think we may come from different perspectives, but I think that's also so valuable about this. Like what I have been really thinking about a lot is not so much community with others, but actually like the natural world.
Yeah.
The ways, right? Like
including that. Yeah.
Yeah. The ways in which, you know, just sleeping when I'm tired and being like trusting that, you know, it's sort of this almost scarcity mindset of like, well, what if there isn't energy later in the week? What if I'm not going to get it done? What if I'm right? As opposed to being like trusting that if I sleep now, I will have energy to do it later, right? Rather than like trusting that natural process. And I read this book that I probably have already talked about on the podcast that I'm obsessed with. I think I sent it to you, called Wintering.
Wintering, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that has like really, and I think also being, you know, at home and during the winter in a pandemic, that's like really made me think about those natural ebbs and flows, right? And like how that one of the big interventions of the industrial, I feel like also we're talking about this, like we're at a Harvard Wellesley's like colloquium.
And I know.
Maybe we should like define the industrial revolution. I think it's great. Like, listen, people think life coaching is light on the substance. No. Okay. Industrial revolution is when society basically went from an agrarian system where most people lived on the land. There were all, and farmed. There were also obviously tradespeople, craftspeople. It's not like everybody was a farmer, but decentralized. And actually I've been reading this book called Do Nothing. That is a great book about this transition. To, right, essentially the invention of the steam engine made it possible to have factories. And now all of a sudden it matters. Like what's 8 a.m., what's 8 p.m., like how many hours are you working? All of a sudden we get this, that plus the invention of electrical light and the ability to have, you know, to work past the natural rhythm of the sun up and the sun down.
Being able to ignore the natural rhythm and having
supremacy
over the natural rhythm. Yeah.
Right. And so then all of a sudden what you get is all these people working in factories, doing mechanized rote work over and over. You get the invention of kind of modern commerce and capitalism like that. All, so that's what we're talking about when we talk about the Industrial Revolution. It's the, for anybody who's listening, it's like, what the fuck is going on? It's the invention of factories and modern kind of modern labor. And that has a whole host of different, I mean, it impacts every area of our life, right? For instance, now there's this structure where you're supposed to sleep 8 hours at a time and then you go to work and then you do whatever, right? Whereas there's this sort of lost history phenomenon of how people used to sleep, which was go to sleep basically when the sun went down, wake up 4 or 5 hours later, be up in the middle of the night for a few hours. People would visit with their neighbors, write in their journals, have sex. Then they would have second sleep. They'd go back to sleep again. Like it's a huge change in what was millennia of natural living. Mm. And so what Simone and I are kind of talking about here is like, what are the ways that that has, can I curse on your podcast? I know I can curse on my podcast. I don't know about yours. You're rated. Okay.
Yeah.
Occasionally I get on one and then the host is like, oh my God, no, we don't do that.
Yeah.
How that has
all
like, fucked
up.
Yeah. How that I made sense, but how that's fucked up, like our ideas about what is productivity, how do we, and we're all trying to fit ourselves into this, like, you know, like the 9 to 5, what does that come from? It comes from the factory floor of like,
literally once, comes from the factory floor.
Yeah. Only after the unions got to it. Before that, it was like 9 to 9. It was like a 12-hour, 14-hour workday.
Yeah.
Right. It comes from that. And that you know, that is, has a cost.
And the piece I think I was getting, you're helping me to better articulate my concept, but the piece about like solitary, individualistic versus collaborative is that if you're on the factory floor, your factory, like your shift manager or the owner of the factory or whatever, does not give a flying shit about like your input or your feelings, right, or your creative flow or anything. Right.
Right.
So it's kind of like you're, it's that, that's the piece that's isolating. And the thing is, when you have your own business, as my clients do, or even if you don't have a business and you're one of Kara's clients and you have a job or you have some, you know, you're a mom or whatever you are. The thing is, in some way or another, we all get to be our own boss, right? We get to be our own manager and we get to make decisions about how we use your time, what we're going to prioritize and how we manage ourselves. And we often get into the mindset of there's like a dictatorial shift manager or you know, factory floor manager, and the employees, the factory workers' input does not matter. So that's like very unidirectional that way.
Yeah, we replicate that ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you get out of that model, it's like, what if the factory, the shift manager like really wanted to talk to you about your feelings and he wanted to create a collaborative work environment for you?
And also, but even like if we back it up a step, like productivity comes out of the word production, right? Mm-hmm. The whole idea that productivity is a thing is from the Industrial Revolution, right? It's like my understanding of intellectual history and linguistic history is basically that like blacksmiths weren't sitting around in 1284 AD being like, I have not been productive today. Like I haven't.
Measure, like I don't, not productivity, but like output somehow, right? If blacksmiths are supposed to create like 10 axes a day, I don't know what they
I think that's how we think about it, but I'm not sure that's true. Like, yes, of course. I mean, I think it's from my, like, and I'm not a sociologist. This is layperson reading of, you know, of the work, but like you read this Do Nothing book, one of the things she talks about is that, you know, we assume sort of we're so imbued in this idea that like there've always been bosses and it's top down and hierarchical that we sort of assume like, well, okay, it was that way in the Middle Ages too. You had like the people in charge and then the serfs and then, you know, everybody had bosses. But in fact, like that even, you know, serfs sort of land, like agricultural peasants would work a certain number of hours a day, kind of sun up to sun down, but also there were like 100 days off a year from like feast days and various other things. And that artisans and craftspeople were really just in charge of their own schedule and could work as much or as little as they wanted. So
not how I thought it went down.
I know, right? It's wild. This book is great. It's called Do Nothing. It's not what you think, because I think we're so imbued with this idea about productivity, which I really think is a concept that really comes out of the Industrial Revolution. And that sort of like, all of a sudden now you can be like, okay, like how much are we producing? Let's double productivity. Let's triple it. Let's like, right. Like that kind of thought process. It's like one level of the coaching work we can do is to be like, okay, well, let's see how honoring our natural rhythm still allows us to be productive in a different way. And then the next level is like, listen, maybe you're not, who cares? Right. Like there is obviously a desire to create and contribute that I think is natural. But it's like, we have to be
too much
careful.
For me. My brain can't handle this like post-productive worldview. I can't handle it. What else are we living for if not to produce? I don't understand.
But that's so wild, right? I had a coaching call in the clutch and usually like a month or two ago, and usually I coach 3 or 4 people an hour. Like I coached this one woman for like, I think 40 minutes, most of the call, because it was so relevant to everybody. And because it was all about this, she was like, I mean, she was in a less humorous, much more like, I hate you way. Like, I don't understand what you're saying. My value is based on what am I here for if not to do things and produce things? And I do think that's, let's just ask ourselves that question.
You know, I think I spend a lot of time thinking about dying and death.
During all of our naps, I mean, what are you going to think about when you're just lying around? That's just the time for
napping
that.
Is a mini death.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
Think about the fact that we are all ultimately headed towards non-productivity, right? Because once we're dead, we're not producing anything. And also leading up to the days that we die, you know, in the best case scenario, like we die, you know, old and like die in your sleep peacefully. But then we're meant to produce less and less and less as we go on. Like you can't, if you're like 90 years old, you can't be producing 5,000 widgets a day, right? And that is how old age is supposed to be. And I'm thinking so much about this because I'm already anticipating like my like old age identity crisis of like, if I have nothing to produce for the world, what is my worth as a human being? right?
But also like, there's two levels, right? One is, what are you producing? So you're not producing widgets, but maybe older people are producing wisdom or producing
insight. What if I don't just want to talk to anybody and I'm a cranky old person who's like, I don't want to give you yourself. Anymore.
But I do think that next level is the production, right? Because this is, what about people who live with disabilities, right? Who cannot produce widgets now anyway? Like, I think that, you know, what about people who don't want to? I mean, I do think that, you know, it is hard to, like, the Protestant capitalism goes as deep as, almost as deep as the sexism and the racism and all of it. Like, the idea, truly believing that it would be fine if we didn't produce anything or accomplish anything or like finish tasks, I think is like mind-breaking for most of us. The idea that like our value or our worth would not depend on that. But I think it has to, right? I mean, in my, like, when I think about value and worth, I'm like, every time I teach this, I'm basically like, it is all made up, but yeah. Either we all have it or we all don't. You're not going to convince me of any logical system where like some of us have some of it and it's titrated based on how many emails you answered today. Like, it's either we're all in, we're all out. Those are the only two options. Yeah. I choose to pick we're all in which case what we produce really doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah. My brain is still a little bit broken.
I think it's normal. I think that's supposed to break it. I mean, I think I think we have to let our brains be broken about that because it is such a dominant, like, yeah, what would life be like if you didn't think that your goal was to do things or produce things? I mean, people used to have lives like that.
That gets me thinking about why I work and why I work very hard when I do, is that because I chalk it up to my ADHD, but I have a very poor, like, receptivity to external direction. Mm-hmm. That's a very nice way of putting it.
I know most entrepreneurs have some version of oppositional defiant disorder, probably.
Exactly. Well, they call it.
We really don't like being told what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So in you know, Gretchen Rubin's Four Tendencies, you know,
yeah,
I'm totally a rebel. And all of my life, I thought it was a personality defect, but now I think otherwise. But why did I just bring this up? Oh, because I've never been good at working or producing because other people told me to, or because I should. Mm-hmm. I thought I should, because it should just create so much resistance and guilt and shame and resentment inside me that just sabotages everything. Right. So when I became an entrepreneur, it was finally an opportunity for me to discover, if it's not the should, what does compel me and what does push me? And it's a conversation I have a lot with my clients because they're learning how to think outside of that should model for the first time. And so that's why I'm sure you experience a lot with your students as well, Kara, is if I'm not pressuring myself, if I'm not hustling myself for worthiness, then if I'm not going to beat myself up, if I don't meet my goal, then what's going to fuel me, right? How am I ever going to be motivated if it's not with a stick, right?
Right. This comes up all the time.
Right.
And I think the normal life coach answer, which I think is true, is that's not actually how it works. You actually will have more energy. You will get more done. But I think that like one of the things that I think distinguishes the way I do this work, and like you, it's sort of, it's like, I have to for my brain. I can't only go halfway. Like, I have to go all the way. So for me to buy into that idea, I have to go all the way to like, and if you don't, so what? Like, who decided that it was better to produce shit while hating yourself, mm-hmm, than to love yourself and do nothing? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, if those are only the two options, right? I always am trying to flip it for my clients. Like, no, they think the bottom line is I have to produce things. Now, if you're telling me I can also be nice to myself, okay, I'll try that.
Right.
But like, the production has to happen. That's the shift manager, right? That's like, listen, if you guys are saying that a longer lunch break would actually boost productivity, okay, we can try it.
Right.
But like, we got to make that amount of widgets at the end of the day. That's the bottom line.
Right.
And flip that and say, what if the bottom line non-negotiable is I'm nice to myself?
Yeah, I think that's,
if I get shit done, okay. And if I don't get shit done, well, doesn't matter. That's not a reason to change it. Like, I'm nice to myself no matter what, and then we'll see. And that really requires delinking that productivity from value.
But I'm wondering though, that's like, I want everybody to sit with that, including myself. I'm wondering for you though, and this is what I experience. So once I delink all the shoulds and I fire my internal shift manager, and then what drives me, because I do want to work, right? I'm incredibly driven by my love of the work. And the best that I can capture what it feels like for me is that it really feels like a very organic and loving call and response with something both outside of me and inside me, but it's like, it feels like a loving pull, the way that when you're really attracted to somebody, you just like, your body is like pulled towards them. You just want to go like towards them and make out with them. Mm-hmm. And I feel this pull towards work, and responding to it is not stressful. It's not, I mean, sometimes it requires me to manage my mind, but it feels like showing up for something, the way I would call it, is like for a sacred calling. Now, I think the difference here is that I don't as much make that professional calling, my quote unquote work in the world, such a central part of my identity anymore, because I realized that if I got old and sick or whatever, and if I didn't have that, I would break down, and I don't want to break down. So what else is there to me? And so I think I'm not quite at the level that you were just talking about, where I completely, you know, I have it completely delinked, but I'm learning that my worthiness as a person, or my purpose in life, isn't just about my professional identity. But when it does come to my professional identity, it does feel like a loving call and response, right? Like I show up in response to something that is, you know, this pulling me, you know, towards sharing with my people, towards collaboration with ideas that want to express themselves through me. And it does feel so loving and so harmonious. And there's no element of hustle or pressure or should or any, there's no shift manager. And it, I mean, I guess this is what like a lot of creativity teachers would call like working with your muses, right?
Yeah, being in flow.
And I wonder, like, what's your experience with that? Because your work is
amazing. I want to talk about that, I want to answer that. But as you're talking, something's coming up for me, which is really interesting to me. Because if really what we were valuing was the thing we were producing, then I think you could need to take a break, be sick, go on maternity leave, end up older, not able to do the widgets, and you would have already still produced the things you produced. So mm-hmm. It should feel fine. So mm-hmm. I don't really think it is about the producing. I think it's about the moral value of working as an act, right? Of like having to be in the process of producing all the time. Otherwise, it should be able to be like, listen, I came up with relativity. I'm done now.
Right. But that's like, not how it works.
Like, right. Like I had this amazing idea when I was 19. And that's not that Einstein was 19, but you know what I mean? Right, it should be able to be like, okay, I came up with a big, huge thing of value to the world. And like, now I can just do nothing for the rest of my life and not feel bad about it. But that's not what we're describing. When you're hooked into that like productivity hustle, you don't ever think you've done enough, right? I don't really think it's about the actual creation of value. It's about the judgment of the self for not constantly being in the act of producing. Right now we're going to end up in like Marxist theory.
Such an important distinction.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, this is one of the, right, one of the Marxist critiques of capitalism is that, I love this podcast episode, is that they're like, right, that people are turned into the means of production, right? And that their value is only as the means of production of capital that accrues to somebody else, a profit that accrues to somebody else. But regardless of the profit part, the dehumanizing part is turning humans into means of production. And so if we are believing that our only value comes from our productivity. And I think we are. I think we have to be careful not to be like, oh, I just want to like, produce things of value for the world. Like then it should be okay to be done at some point. So that's that side, just a little side note about
really good point.
Marxism. Yeah. And my, in terms of what I experience, I don't experience, yours sounds lovely. I would sign up for that. That's not what I experience, I don't think. What I experience is, I think maybe one thing is like, I have always been very mission driven in my life. Like all of my jobs have been kind of in that same way. And and so that feels the
like
same.
You would do it if there was no reward ever and you never got recognized for it. Like you would just be driven to do something towards.
Yeah. I just have always felt like this is, I mean, I was raised with a very strong, like kind of social justice. Like your job is to make the world a better place. And in Judaism, there's this idea of tikkun olam, which is the idea that the world is broken and we're all responsible for making it whole.
Yeah.
So it's like all of our jobs to contribute to make the world a better place. And
doesn't feel like a should to you, does it? Doesn't it feel like?
No, but it's almost like, no, it doesn't feel like, that has never felt like a should. That feels so that either because it's in a sense internal or just the socialization happened so early. Like it's just, it's like never even up for debate. I mean, it's not up for, I understand other people don't think that and I'm not judging other people.
I think that's what I'm characterizing as the pull, right?
Yeah. I think I've just always felt that.
Yeah.
The should comes in for me much more with like specific projects or amount or ways of doing thing or specific kinds of work. I don't I think for me that, yeah, I guess maybe it doesn't feel like a strong pull because I'm so used to it. But what I feel is much more like, it's just when there's a lot of shoulding, then there's just so much drama and resistance. And I am like white knuckling through doing the work. Yeah. And when I'm able to just be like, to allow myself to rest and to trust that I will want to, it really reminds me so much of the process of going through intuitive eating, like stopping dieting and learning how to intuitively eat. And it's like the difference between so many people try to use intuitive eating as a diet. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, I'm going to allow, as long as at the end, I'm going to lose weight or at least not gain.
Right.
Right. And so then like, you're never.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're never actually in allowance at all because you have an agenda the whole time about what's supposed to happen. And you're constantly monitoring it to see if it's happening or not. Right. And so what I experience when I'm able to really be in this like allowance of my natural rhythms and with not the shoulding and letting go of the stuff I don't want to do and all of that is really just feels much more, it's less feeling pulled to get to my computer and do the work. And it's much more just feeling like, well, of course, like there's nothing in the way. The same way that like, it's like the same amount of pull as I would feel to like eat when I'm hungry or sleep when I'm tired.
Kind of like just noticing and letting gravity like do its thing rather than.
Yeah.
Like,
it doesn't feel like I think in the beginning of my coaching career also, I mean, part of this may be like in the beginning, the first 2 to 3 years, I did feel like that. So
yeah, you're some just jaded of this, now.
Exactly. I no longer, I think it's less jaded and more like you've settled into a deep companionate relationship with your work, right? Like
I don't want like, anymore.
Yeah. I'm like, listen, okay. We don't fuck 3 times a day anymore, but like, we still know how to
love each other.
Yeah. Get each other off. We're still having sex. Like it feels, I think in the first couple of years, there's just this wild, like, this is my life. Like, what is happening? Like, I get to do this work and it's changing people's lives. And like, you know, you're just so fired up and that's a beautiful time. And one of the tragedies of perfectionism is that it robs coaches and anybody of enjoying that time.
Yeah.
So that's the only time it's going to feel like that. Like what it feels like those first 3 years. So it'd be like your honeymoon period with a partner and you spent the whole time, you know, criticizing yourself in the relationship. Yeah. And then now 5 years in, it just feels much more like, when I'm in the headspace that I want to be in about this, it feels as easy as like sleeping when I'm tired, eating when I'm hungry, sitting down to do the work that I want to get done this week because this project is going in, you know, it's just like no drama.
I just think it's so interesting too, because I think we are presenting two, not different perspectives, but coming from different angles. I think you have such a brilliant discursive intellect and I'm a lot more like spacey and flowy. And for me, it's so critical to be plugged into that flow thing for me to shift out of the should hustle mode and into wait, even if it's like doing something dumb and annoying, like, I don't know, like it's like arranging something on my calendar or doing something that Pavel wants me to do. I don't want to. What are you talking about?
Pavel's the butt of all of our podcast complaints. We love you, Pavel.
You're the best. Right. So it's like, I don't want to figure out how to use this mic. Right. Like whatever.
Right.
And the thing that like I have so often I make myself plug into, but really like, what is this really about? Right. And I have to plug into, when I set up this mic, even though I don't want to do it, I wish Pablo could do it for me. When I do it, it's in service of me being able to reach people, whatever. So that part of it, I think my personality is such that it's really important for me to like plug into that purposefulness, the pull towards service, the pull towards whatever creative expression, that's where I get a lot of my energy. And when I don't get that, I feel like I have built the discipline and the kind of, you know, way of being where I can do that without drama. It's like, all right, just show up and do the thing and we're not going to have a big whatever about it. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it's interesting. I also think I'm somebody who's very prone to extremes, like prone to extremes of pre-coaching, prone to extremes of emotion. I mean, it's funny because like I'm not like an adrenaline junkie. I would never like jump out of a plane or like, you know, I'm not prone to that kind of extreme, but I'm prone to like being interested in extremes of emotional experience. And I think just I'm naturally very roller coastery, which is why I came to coaching in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so part of it, I think, is like I've experienced both. I've experienced the like hating, dreading of work, right? And then I've experienced the high of it. And I think right now where I am in my life is like a lot about balancing that out. And like balance always sounded so boring to me, right? Like what, you know? And I still create space in my life for certain kinds of extremists, really, that are like much more negotiated and contained and done on purpose. But I do think, like, I feel much more these days like the state of flow I want to be in is a state of flow that is more about like flowing through, kind of like flowing through my days in an easier way. Mm. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it just feels more diffuse.
Movement without resistance, right?
Yeah. It's just sort of like, oh, what would be here without all the noise? Mm. Right. And like, and I think in some ways for me right now, excitement is its own kind of noise. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, what is life like? Like, I know how to create excitement. Like, I can create a, you know, like positive and negative. I am very good at that. Yeah. And like, what is my life? I think because I'm doing a lot of this work in my personal life and in my personal relationships, it's like, what is it like to, yeah, what is this like in the absence of the noise? Which in some ways for me is what thought work, that thought work element of coaching is all about, right? Like, what is it we are truly encountering and experiencing in the absence of noise? And I also think some of the difference we're describing is just like,
that. What's the answer to that?
I think it's just like, there's no words for it, right? It's just like the experience of being an animal in the world. Like, yeah. Or, yeah. But I do think we also experience, I mean, you know, we're like, I don't feel at all that we need to like converge on one explanation or description. Not, I'm not saying yeah. you do either, but like we definitely, you know, I do think you are more, I wouldn't say spacey or whatever you said. I would say you're more like, you seem from the outside, you seem to operate more with a sort of, it's just almost the difference between calling and mission. Mm. It's like you're called to something and in conversation with something.
And you don't feel that way?
I don't feel like I'm in conversation with something. No, I don't feel.
To me.
Yeah, I don't feel, I mean, of course I feel like I'm in conversation with people and I love that. And like, that's how I get think through ideas. Like I love we're having this conversation right now. But no, I've never felt like, I don't have that spiritual aspect to my experience. Like, I don't feel like I'm a channel for something. I don't feel like the ideas are like out there and coming to me. Like, I don't believe in God. I don't feel like I have a relationship with the divine. Like, that's just not kind of my experience. My experience is very like, oh, it's fucking crazy just to be a human. My feeling is like, you know, like I had a long-term romantic partner who not only believed in God, like was Christian, believed in Jesus, had like a personal relationship with Jesus. And, you know, I'm Jewish and don't believe in God. So it was like, that was a big difference. But like a lot of the things he would describe as religious experiences, I was like, oh, I've totally felt that. I just call it a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I call it just like walking down the street and having some crazy brain experience about the transcendence of life and beauty. Like, I don't know. It's just, you know, that's what's happening in there. But I think part of the difference in what we're describing is just a kind of difference. It may even not be a different experience, but a difference in how we talk about and like describe and define that experience. But I, you know, if we wanted to get all astrology about it, I am a Taurus.
I know.
I could feel it coming out of your brain, my psychic powers. That's the weird part. I'm unfortunately slightly psychic, even though I don't believe in it. But it's like very grounded, it's very.
You're in denial of like, oh, like you're actually just a witch.
I totally think I'm a Jewish witch. But yeah, very grounded, very physical, very like in the here and now. What is this world? And I'm not very attuned, in my opinion, to the. I think I am probably. I'm witchy about other people. But I don't feel like I'm witchy about a different realm.
I disagree. You know? I think that we just talk about it using different language.
Yeah, that's possible too.
Right? Because like you're somebody who responds to seasons. Like we've either talked about
that to me is like the world though. I think of like the witchiness. I think of like in my mind, you're having a conversation with some kind of otherworldly spirit.
I think you are too, but you just don't think that it is. You just think it's like you having a brain experience. And I'm like, no.
It's- or it's the opposite. You think you're, all right, right. Or I think you're having a brain experience.
I'm totally allowing space for your flawed world.
Yeah. I appreciate that about you. That's very, what's your astrology sign again?
I'm a quadruple Pisces for everybody who's listening.
I thought there's going to be some Virgo in there.
A little bit. Yeah. I have a Virgo moon. That's what it's like.
Oh my God. Also, we're like at an hour. This podcast is.
Oh my God. I have only talked about one of like the seven tenets.
Different. That way you can do seven more podcasts.
Brilliant. Oh my gosh. Okay. No, but I just want to say this though. I think that.
Yes, do it.
We are all I think the principles that by which humanity functions are the same because we're all built the same, right? And you can be spiritual and call it one thing, you can be pragmatic and call it another thing, but it's like gravity works the same for everybody. Our bodies work the same for, I mean, you know, with variation, of course. And I think it's important for people to hear, like, there's different ways of understanding and processing it, but it doesn't mean that we're all actually having different. I actually fundamentally don't care if my spiritual experience is just my brain being crazy and this organic, you know, experience of like nature doing its thing. I think it doesn't take away from the mystery either way. And it doesn't take away from the crazy experience that is being human.
I think most coaches are pragmatists at heart because we're like, okay, but like, is it helpful?
LCS coaches are pragmatists.
At least LCS coaches are pragmatists at heart. Yeah, but that's what I love about this work is like, even my thoughts about the model, I'm like, is that helpful though? Right? It's just always back to like, what result am I getting?
Yeah.
What's happening here?
Okay.
Fantastic. I do feel like we could do like 12 more of these. So we should just have a whole, we might just have to have our own podcast.
That was like the opening speech of the symposium.
I know. I feel like we need to have like a once a month serial podcast where we're just like life coaching and intellectual history.
I would actually fucking love that.
I would totally do that. All right. We're going to talk about the rest of this offline.
Okay. We'll talk to y'all later.
Bye.
If you're loving what you're learning in the podcast, you have got to come check out The Clutch. The Clutch is my feminist coaching community for all things Unfuck Your Brain. It's where you can get individual help applying all these concepts I teach to your own life and learning how to do thought work to blow your own mind. It's where you can learn new coaching tools not shared on the podcast that will change your life even more. It's where you can hang out and connect over all things thought work with other podcast chickens just like you and me. It's my favorite place on earth and it will change everything. I guarantee it. Come join us at www.unfuckyourbrain.com/the clutch. Or you can just text your email address to 347-934-8861. If you text your email address to that number, we'll text you right back with a link to check out everything you need to know about The Clutch. 347-934-8861. Or again, just go online to www.unfuckyourbrain.com/the clutch. I cannot wait to see you there.